Welcome to The Rachel Peterson Show, the place where we dissect social media strategies entrepreneurs are using to build their brand, go viral, and make a massive impact. Let's dive on in.
Hello and welcome to another episode of The Rachel Peterson Show. On this week's episode, you guys, I actually get a little bit emotional as I talk to an amazing young entrepreneur and, in my opinion, philanthropist with a bigger mission. This young man, Gret Glier, has taken social media and crowdfunding and applied these principles that so many of us just use every day and actually turned them into a difference-making platform, which is just so inspiring. I know you're going to love this interview. It's one of my absolute favorites. So let's just go on in. Okay, so my question for you is, you know, how did you discover that there was a need in the marketplace for what DonorSee brings?
All right, so I lived in Malawi, Africa for 3 years. I'm 26 right now, and I lived in one of the poorest countries in the world for 3 years. And during that time, I experimented with crowdfunding, and I did a whole bunch of different stuff. We raised money to build over 100 houses for orphans and widows in Malawi, and we there was this one village where we bought a mosquito net to take down the malaria rates in that village for like 900 people. And we did a whole bunch of different stuff. And then the big thing that I did right before I left, I spent about 4 months crowdfunding a $100,000 girls' school, which is up and running right now. There's 120 girls from vulnerable girls from this village. And they're going to school in this like rural village called Nkanda Village. And it's a completely self-sustained school. And what I realized was it was just me. Like, I didn't have a big charity backing me. It was just me like going out there on my own trying to raise this money. And what I found was when I showed people exactly like where their money was going, they were so much more eager to give than you hear all these people who they give to a big charity and it feels like a drop in the bucket. They don't feel like they're making a difference. But the people who gave through all of the projects I was doing, they really felt like their money was making an actual difference and they got excited about it. And anytime I shared a video, they would share it with their friends and they'd be like, you can be a part of this too. And it was like this kind of like cool movement. And so as I was crowdfunding all of these different projects, I realized, oh, like, how can I replicate this? How can it be not just me crowdfunding, but now, like, how can I have this also happen all over the world for all sorts of different stuff, not just girls' education, but what about, like, let's, like, crowdfund some stuff to fight sex trafficking in Thailand or poverty in India or whatever it is that you want to, whatever it is that you care about. DonorSee is the place where you can come and make that happen.
Holy moly. This is like absolutely blowing my mind. You know, we hear so many different reports on how millennials aren't really making a difference and they're so entitled and we're so entitled. I'm a millennial too. Mm-hmm. But my mind is actually blown by what you have already achieved at just the age of 26. And what's cool about it is you're not, you know, wearing it like it's your success badge. You are somebody who actually really cares about making a difference in the world, globally, not just in mm-hmm. your world, in the entire world. I have to kind of back up the conversation, so I'm going to slow you down just a little bit.
Let's do it.
How was that instilled in you? Is that something you were raised being taught about? Did you come from a family that really cared about making a difference, or was there a mentor in your life that helped you to understand the importance of making a global impact?
Okay, so I've had a bunch of really great mentors like that. There's no question about that. But when I think back to like, what was that moment that kind of opened my eyes? It was back in ninth grade, and it was like the summer before ninth grade. Me and my family, we went out to Kenya, Africa, for a vacation, not like a mission trip or anything like that. We were there to go on like safaris. And, you know, I lived in Northern Virginia, right outside DC, super wealthy area. I went to a private school, like all this stuff. I grew up like in a very privileged, comfortable life. And we get to Kenya and we're going on this like amazing, it was a very expensive vacation. And we land at the airport and this taxi takes us from the airport to the resort that we were staying at. And as we were driving through the streets, for one thing, we were on the left side of the road. So that was like a weird thing. And the cars were driving super, like insanely fast. But then the thing that really was like eye-opening was all along the entire ride there, all along the side of the road, there were these like shacks and there were these like little naked kids playing in the dirt. And there was just extreme, extreme poverty like I had never seen before. And I'd heard about it. And you hear about stuff on TV and you see those like sappy commercials. But like to see it and be there in person, that was like, whoa, wait a second. Like what's going on here? And then we get to the resort and these giant gates open up and we go inside and they open the door for us. And there's these guys holding these hot towels, like ready to wash our hands off. And we have this like extravagant vacation. And I'm a very like numbers oriented person. So I'm putting like all the numbers together. I'm like, oh my gosh, like we're spending how much per night here? And then the people outside of this gate, they live on like a dollar a day. Like all of that realization was like hitting me in the face over this one vacation. And so I think that was the first time I really got punched in the gut. And then I went through high school, I went through college, and immediately after I graduated, I started working at Enterprise Rent-A-Car, which is it's a rental car company. It's like mm-hmm. a corporate job, 9 to 5. It's just like the normal boring thing. And I was doing it for a year, and I was actually promoted very quickly, and I was told by all the higher ups, like, hey, Grit, like you're going to get fast track. You're great at what you do. We want to see you around here for a long time. And that was so depressing to me. I didn't want to spend the next 20 years of my life like thinking, like getting really good at renting cars to people or being a manager over people who, like, that was just not something that was something that depressed me. So I'm having all these experiences and I have a year of working a corporate job under my belt. You know, I can like check that off on the resume or whatever. And I get this opportunity to go to Malawi, to teach for a year. And so I take it and I go over there and then I ended up staying for 3 years. So yeah, there was a whole line of events, kind of a combination of being dissatisfied with what people told me like I'm supposed to achieve or supposed to care about. And then there's also just like going over there and actually like feeling like, oh wow, I can make a difference in people's lives, and like a very meaningful, drastic difference. Not like, oh, I like did a good job of renting this car to this annoying customer. Like this was like yes. real difference in people's lives. Like people's lives were being changed. And in a lot of cases, there are people who, like, I can tell you for a fact, there were people who could have died that didn't die because I was over there in Malawi in the right place at the right time. You know, all these different things. So it ended up being, it totally changed my life.
That's absolutely unbelievable. And I think something that's good thing I have an editor. Just kidding. I might leave that in because it's fun.
Yeah, leave it.
So one of the things that is incredible to me is that you had that itch to be an entrepreneur, but that also was combined with something so much deeper. Like you had this purpose that was greater than just delivering something that makes life convenient. You were actually making life accessible and really creating potential for people in parts of the world that wouldn't otherwise have those opportunities.
Mm-hmm. And there's, it kind of has to be that way, right? You can have someone who like really wants to be an entrepreneur, but that's such an ambiguous thing. Like if you just graduate from college and you say, I want to be an entrepreneur, but you've got nothing that you're passionate about, you'll be unsuccessful. But if you find that thing that like you really resonate with, for me, it's like, it's showing Americans the money that they're, it's the impact their money can make when they give. If you have something that you're really passionate about, then like that's going to drive you to this further success. But it's, you know, just wanting to be like this ambiguous entrepreneur, you're not going to get anywhere with that, I don't think.
I think you're absolutely right about that. You have to have a purpose. You have to have kind of the why that stands behind everything that you do. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that's kind of interesting, and I think my audience will find this kind of interesting to hear, I'm obviously passionate about social media, but to me, it's not just about hashtags. It's not just about, you know, followers or the amount of engagement that you get. The reason I fell in love with social media was because I realized it was a way to connect with people on a deeper level in a different way. And this is the most important part that I think you've really tapped into. It's a way to get a big, impactful message across in a big way.
Yeah, that's something entrepreneurs are really good at, like identifying how you can spend your resources in the most effective way possible. And there's no question about it. Social media is one of those ways that like totally worth investing in. It totally has that ripple effect that is hard to find on any similar scale anywhere else.
Yeah, definitely. Now, how was it that you were able to crowdfund these campaigns successfully? I think it was just one campaign to start, correct?
Well, I mean, the very first thing I ever did, like my first year in Malawi, originally I went over there to be a math teacher, and I was at like an international school, and it was like it had like an Olympic-sized swimming pool in a third world country, right? Like it was, there's a whole bunch of different things going on here. But the first thing I did was there was this cleaning lady at the school. Her name was Rose, and she lived in a village like across the street from this international school, and she would walk to school every day. It would take her an hour, and on the way there, it was kind of dangerous, and she could be like attacked or different things could happen. So what we did was I crowdfunded using like a little PayPal button on my blog, $60 to buy her a bike so she could get back and forth and get home and tutor her daughters more. She's a single mom. And so that was like the first thing I did that. And then I sent pictures to the people who had donated, and I was like, oh, this is like a fun thing to do. Like it's really fun to like not only like get the money to Rose, but also like show people back in America, hey, your $60 is like changing this lady's life on a daily basis. So we went from the bike, and then we fundraised a house for this widow. I'm curious what you think. How much do you think it costs to build a house in a rural village in Malawi?
You know, I could probably guess, and I'm going to guess way lower than it is in the United States, just because I'm guessing that's just how it is. I'm going to guess it is $20,000 to build a house.
That's what I was thinking. I thought it would cost like somewhere in the range of like $20,000. And my buddy Blessings, who's a good friend of mine, he took me out to a village and he showed me this widow, and she was homeless and rainy season was coming in a month, and she needed a house before rainy season comes or she's in big trouble. She's like 70. She hadn't eaten in a week. It was like very dire situation. So I was like, okay, man, how much is this going to cost? I'm like, you know, I'm swallowing my spit. I'm like, oh man, how am I going to pull this off? And he says, oh, it's kind of a lot. It's going to cost $800 to build her. And I thought, you know what? I spent $800 on my last iPad. I bet you I can fundraise for this lady a house.
Wow.
Yeah, so that was another thing. Charities have done such a bad job at explaining just how effective your money can be. Like, you can build someone a house for the same price as your last iPad or laptop or big screen TV or whatever it was that your last big electronic purchase. And this is just the reality. It's almost unimaginable, because we live in the States. We live in like this bubble where like you go to Starbucks and you pay $5 for a drink, and that's just like what our life is like. But that's not what the rest of the world lives like. So anyways, we did the house, and after the house, I started getting really into video, and I would make these videos saying, hey, there's this family and they have AIDS and they could really use a pig farm, and pig farming is a really great sustainable way to help these people, and people would donate money to that, and then we would buy some pigs for them. And I just kept going at this back and forth, and I kept scaling up, and people kept sending their money, right? You think most charities, I think people give to once because they feel guilty, and then they like hide and the charity bothers them with emails. With me, it was just like I would just post more projects and people were like would give every week. It was like they looked forward to it because it was like they got to feel like they were a part of it, because I was making videos and showing them how it was making an impact. So eventually we scaled up, and then we did this, you know, the really big project was trying to cover the village with nets, with mosquito nets, and that was $9,000. And I was like, oh man, I can't believe like we did this. And then I was like, well, what if I tried like building a girls' school using some of these same techniques? And it was a lot of work, and it took a lot longer. And we did like 12 different phases. So like the first week, I was like, all right, now we're gonna excavate the ground, and that's gonna cost $7,000. And then we're gonna lay the foundation, and that's gonna cost $10,000. And every week, people would come back, and they would donate. They would tell their friends about it. Some people like went out and wrote grants for us. We got a $10,000 grant that someone else wrote for us and got the money to us. So wow, a whole bunch of different pieces came together, and we got the school built. And September 5th of this past year is when it had its first day of school, and it's going right now.
Wow. Have you had the opportunity to visit since the school was built?
I was on September 5th was the day that it opened up, and that was my September 6th was the last time I was in Malawi. So I haven't had a chance to go back since then, but I'm constantly like, I have a really good guy out there named Prince who like constantly takes videos for me, and I share them on my social media. So, you know, there were like 1,000 people who donated to the school. So all of them want to see like updates and stuff. So I'm constantly seeing updates, but I, yeah, I want to go back out hopefully within, probably within like the next 6 months before the first year, before the first year is up.
Wow. That is so incredible. So now for anyone who's listening, I think sometimes it's really easy. Are you located in the United States? I don't even know.
Yeah, I'm in like the DC area at the moment.
Okay. I'm in Minnesota. So we're not too far away from each other.
Yeah.
But you know, when you're in the United States, everything here does cost quite a bit more money. And, you know, everything from our coffee to our housing to our crazy houses to our lifestyles. And I think sometimes it's really easy to think that, you know, $5, $10, $100 doesn't make a huge difference because we only see it in the way that it would affect somebody in our lives and in the United States or in Canada or wherever anyone is listening from. But I would love to get from you an example of what kind of difference $5, $10, $20, $100 would do in some of these global projects that you're working on.
Okay, so can I tell a sad story?
Yes.
Is that okay?
Yes, all right. I might cry. I'm being serious. I'm emotional.
My first year in Malawi, I'm very emotional too. So my first year in Malawi, I went out there and I met this little girl named Emily, and she's like, she was like seven at the time, like beautiful little Malawian girl. And I actually have a video about her that people could look up. She's just like this really beautiful Malawian girl, big smile on her face, like big teethy smile. And she just seems like she's so happy, so joyful. And I asked Blessings like, oh, cool, like where's her family or whatever. And he started telling me the story about her background and how she like currently lives with her grandmother. And apparently, so 2 years ago, Emily did have a mom and a dad, and the dad was somewhat abusive to her and her little brother. And he was actually extremely abusive to his wife, their mom. And one day he beat her, and she developed these like sores all over her body, and especially on her legs. And my buddy Blessings, who I've mentioned a couple times, he sent a message to his friend an email to his friend in the States, and he said, "Hey, we need $20 to help this lady, Emily's mom, get to the hospital. Can we get $20?" And the guy in America, he didn't quite understand. He had never been to Malawi before. He didn't quite understand. You know, you hear $20, you think like, what is that going to do? And also, it's kind of, there's like this reputation that like Africans are corrupt or something like that, which I'm not saying is good or bad, but he kind of had that like, oh, I'm not sure if I should, you know, enable this guy or whatever. So he didn't give the money. And then 6 months later, this guy actually comes on a mission trip with him and a bunch of other people, and Blessings is giving them a tour through the village. And as they're walking through the village, Emily's mom is lying on the ground in the sun. She's just like baking. She's got these sores all over her leg, it's obviously a really bad situation. So this guy sees Emily's mom and is like, what is this? Like, what's going on here? And he says, and Blessings tells him, oh, you remember the lady that you didn't give money to from 6 months ago? She hasn't been able to get to the hospital yet. And so Blessings, the whole mission team, they are like, okay, we're here for 2 weeks, and we have this whole schedule lined up. Forget it. Like, all of this, we're taking all off the table. Our one goal while we're here is to just help this lady. We're helping Emily's mom while she's here. And so they got her like a nice mattress. They got her food. They took her to the hospital back and forth every single day. And they even like got a bunch of supplies and left it with her on their very last day. And they got on a plane and they went home. And less than 24 hours after they left, she passed away.
No. Oh my gosh.
And it was $20. And you just think like, okay, man, if they could have just seen it or like understood, then this kind of thing wouldn't happen. And there's a million NGOs in Malawi. There's a million NGOs all over the place, but they're not able to make like this kind of impactful, selective personal work. And so I started realizing, man, there's all these like really small things that people need, and they really ought to be able to have access to basic healthcare. Like a $20 trip to the hospital should not be something that people don't get to live without. And so, that was a big reason for my heart behind Why Start DonorSea. It's a lot of the projects on the site are very small scale, like $20 to help a victim of malaria, or $20 to help a girl get a school uniform so she can actually attend school because she can't afford just the school uniform. Like very, very small amounts of money that change people's lives over there.
Absolutely. Before we really dive into what DonorSea is and how it's come together, I would love to hear from you. As you started to kind of share these stories on social media, were there certain platforms where you started to realize there was a lot of traction, or did you notice that, like, you know, Facebook video or Facebook lives were doing mm-hmm. really well with your market? How were you able to get the word out using social media?
Yeah, so that is an interesting question. It's kind of evolved, right? So I've been doing this for a few years. So at first I was posting videos on YouTube, and if you look at my early videos, I'm embarrassed by them. It's like me talking to a camera and it's like highly produced, but it's like I'm in Africa and I'm sitting in a room talking to a camera about like my thoughts when I should have been taking my camera out like into the world and like showing people what it was. So at first, like, people would kind of like watch it because I was kind of entertaining, kind of funny, kind of stupid, and they would just like get into it. But after a while, I realized, no, I got to take my camera like out into these villages and show people like what's really going on. And that's when I realized, when I showed people like real life, that's when a lot of my videos started to get traction. So I had a YouTube presence. And then right as my like YouTube channel started to pick up, that was when Facebook kind of changed their algorithm so that they don't share YouTube videos as much. So then I was like, okay, well, I got to upload to both Facebook and YouTube. And some of my the Facebook videos that I would upload would get something like, you know, over 100 shares. They would get spread around really quickly because Facebook was like really trying to get their platform used in a way that they were just trying to get their platform used, and they were trying to like put down YouTube. So I'd upload to both, and so I have like something like over 1,000 subscribers on YouTube or something like that, and then I have a bunch of followers on Facebook. And if I make like a really good video, I know that there's like a core group of people that's going to share it like crazy. So it's usually more successful when I post videos straight to YouTube.
Wow.
Straight to Facebook,
yeah,
my bad.
Versus doing YouTube and then going to Facebook, because Facebook prefers when you keep it native on their Facebook platform.
Exactly.
Definitely. Okay, so I want to hear so much more about DonorC. I mean, obviously you've touched on it a little bit, but I want to hear kind of the heart and soul behind the program and what it's looking like for 2017, because right now as it stands, it's an application, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I feel like it's going to become something even bigger than that.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, there's a lot of the articles we've been written up in a bunch of different places. USA Today and Huffington Post have both mentioned us, and the way that most people have been describing it is it's the Uber for charities. So it kind of circumvents the whole like. It goes around like all the big slow parts about charities, right? So having like you have these really big organizations and they're paying 100 accountants $50,000 a year, and that's just part of their operating budget. And so you have to raise the amount for the if you're ever going to donate money, you have to raise enough money to pay for your accountants and your CEO and your staff, and then you can start helping people on other parts of the world. And so what this does is it gets money directly to the project. So it's designed for people like me, who I'm out in Malawi, Africa. I've spent 3 years there. And if I see a need, like Emily's mom, I can just take out my phone, click the DonorC app, take a picture of Emily's mom and say, hey, I need $20 to help this lady. Boom, she gets the $20 and she's healed. And I send the thing that we do differently than anyone else is we are committed to sending visual feedback on every donation. So you give money through to help Emily's mom, you'll get a video of her smiling and coming home from the hospital and all that stuff. Or some of like the most impactful videos that get shared the most are the ones where we have like a deaf kid who can't hear, and we'll pay $150 to get them hearing aids for the first time. And like 10 different people will donate $15, and then we'll go and we'll film the kid getting the hearing aids in, and you'll get to see the kid hearing for the very first time, and that video gets sent out to all the donors. And so that's like something that's really cool for people to see. We also do like houses and a bunch of other stuff, but it's those like low cost, high impact stuff that we really like specialize in, and that's what people tend to really love.
I think that is so incredible. And I hope that every single person who's listening is kind of blown away by the impact that every single dollar can make when they partner with you at DonorC. I mean, it's blowing my mind. You know, I could donate $1,000 in the United States, or $1,000 could potentially allow seven or
so
eight.
So much.
Oh my gosh. This interview is blowing my mind, and I don't say that lightly.
Thank you.
So I'm really, really excited to really keep my eyes open for what 2017 is going to look like for you. One question I have, and I'm sure a lot of people who are listening are wondering this as well. Where do you find your energy from for all of this? Like, where do you find something that keeps you going every single day?
Yeah, so there's a lot to that question, because on the one hand, like, some of the things about what I do are extremely hard, right? Like, you know, you hear these horrible, awful stories. Like, Emily's the story about Emily's mom is just – that's, like, the tip of the iceberg. I have, like, story after story of really hard things I've not only heard about but, like, experienced firsthand, like, seen right in front of me, like, really bad stuff. Like, it's just, like, very difficult things that can really, like, eat at you. And at the same time, like – I feel like everything about what I've done so far has such an obvious good impact on the world that there's like a multiplication factor to it, right? So the girls' school that we built, we built a building in the middle of a village, right? That's one thing, and that's like a cool thing to like go up to the building and touch it and see like, oh wow, like I created this like this flow that led to this building. That's kind of like a fun thing on its own. But like the real thing is there's 120 girls who are gonna go to school there every single day. They have like these really beautiful, nice uniforms. They feel like $1 million whenever they go to their school, and then they go back to their village proudly and they share the information and the knowledge that they're learning with all of their little siblings. And then they do this over and over again, and they're able to then go on to college and all of this other stuff. And there's this huge ripple effect that happens just because of the effort and the work that I'm putting in right now. And I know it's just something that I know will expand and expand and expand. And so I'm happy. It's any energy or cost associated with my work is totally made up for in the results of what I get to be a part of. So I think that's where it is.
Absolutely. And for anyone who's listening to this, how can they learn more about what it is that you're up to and kind of, you know, stay atop of what the latest projects are?
Yeah, I would say you can just follow me on Twitter at Gret Glyer, GRETGLYER, and download DonorSea or just go to DonorSea.com if you don't have a smartphone somehow. I'm sure all your listeners, this is a social media podcast, I'm sure all of them have smartphones. But if you don't have a smartphone, you can also go to DonorSea.com. It works the same way. And I would say there's two things you can do. One, you can just follow me on the app. Anytime I post a project, you'll get like a little notification on your phone saying, hey, Gret posted a project and you can donate to his stuff. And I post stuff from all over the world, Haiti, Malawi, India, all that stuff. So you can follow me on the app. And I would also tell people just give $1 to one project and just experience what it's like to actually see where your money's going. If you give just $1, you have you on our platform, you get to see where that dollar goes. That's unprecedented and unlike anything else that's out there. So I would encourage your users to just do that.
Another really cool thing to think about as well. Sometimes I think I'm a parent. I have two small children, and I think about my 6-year-old daughter Dakota. And you know, at this point in time, obviously she doesn't really know the value of a dollar. But I think it would be really cool to kind of get her involved in the app and to say, you know, hey, let's take a look at what $1 can do. Now let's take a look at what $5 can do. You know, and kind of help her to get her mind out of this world that we live in that is so commercial. You know, but showing her. You know, those four quarters that you got for, you know, doing your chores, look at what this can do. And so I encourage anyone with kids to kind of, you know, play around with the application and show your kids what your money can truly do. It's just a resource. It's not something that, you know, defines us or is a part of who we are unless you're using it to really deploy good.
Mm-hmm. And that's something, that's a huge part of our user base on the donor side is there's parents who will sit down with their kids and be like, all right, I'm going to let you spend $100 and you can pick out as many different projects that you want to spend your money on. And I'm going to let you sit. The two of us are going to sit together. We're going to look through the app and pick stuff together. And it's like a really cool bonding experience. And it's unlike anything else. Like what other app on your phone are you going to get anything close to this kind of experience? So I definitely encourage your listeners to do the same thing.
Absolutely. Well, I want to thank you so much for joining today, Gret. I know that this has probably inspired a lot of my listeners. I know I am incredibly inspired, and I'm really excited to follow your progress in 2017.
Thank you, Rachel. It was a pleasure to be here.
Wasn't that such an awesome interview? I still cannot get over everything that Gret is doing and the type of just passion he has for helping other people. I think that anyone who's listening to this interview is going to feel incredibly inspired and ready to take some action and see real results. So what I want you to do is to actually go on over to iTunes, subscribe to this podcast, leave a review, let me know what your favorite part of this interview was. And as always, the show notes are available on my website, rachelpeterson.com/podcast. So as always, I want you to take action, be social, and get prepared to make a massive impact. Let's do this.